This Morning, America's First News starts right after this. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Back to blaming two sides. Good morning. I'm Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal along with Ross Akay on this Wednesday, August 16th. And here's what we have for you this hour.
President Trump declared anew there is blame on both sides for the deadly violence last weekend in Charlottesville, appearing to once again equate the actions of white supremacist groups and those protesting them.
More cities plan to remove Confederate monuments after Saturday's deadly clash in Charlottesville.
Senator Luther Strange will face jurist Roy Moore in Alabama's Republican Senate runoff, while Provo's mayor won a three-way GOP primary for a House seat in Utah.
When it comes to North Korea, Defense Secretary Jim Mattis says one thing, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson another.
Well, I think the way Mattis and Tillerson are approaching this is in a kind of a good cop, bad cop situation, and quite intentionally. I think that Jim Mattis is defense secretary, so he's stressing the military options, that there is a military option for dealing with North Korea. So you've heard some pretty tough rhetoric from him.
That's Jerry Seib, executive Washington editor of The Wall Street Journal. He'll be along with that story in about 10 minutes. In a combative session with reporters, President Trump defended his response to the racially charged protests over the weekend, again saying both sides were to blame for the racially charged clashes in Charlottesville over the weekend.
You had a group on one side that was bad, and you had a group on the other side that was also very violent. And nobody wants to say that.
Trump's remarks were at odds with his statement on Monday that singled out white supremacists for blame and was issued after the president faced criticism across the political spectrum for failing to do so 2 days earlier. One woman was killed during the violence when a car driven by a white supremacist plowed into a crowd. Trump explained why he waited to call out white nationalist groups such as the Ku Klux Klan and neo-Nazis by name.
You don't make statements that direct unless you know the fact. It takes a little while to get the facts. You still don't know the facts.
The news conference was his first at Trump Tower since taking office and was the most confrontational appearance since his last news conference at his New York skyscraper on January 11th when he got into a shouting match with a reporter. Local officials in several states have renewed calls to remove Confederate monuments from public spaces following the outrage at the deadly violence surrounding a white nationalist rally in Charlottesville over the weekend. In Kentucky, Lexington Mayor Jim Gray announced plans to move two Confederate statues from a public area near a historic courthouse in the city that's being turned into a visitor center. In Dallas, Mayor Mike Rawlings announced that he's forming a task force to discuss the city's monuments.
As I expressed before, I think they are dangerous totems in our Dallas society because they divide us versus unite us.
In North Carolina, Governor Roy Cooper agreed that it was time for Confederate-era monuments to come down. He called on the state's legislature to repeal a 2015 law that prevented the removal or relocation of monuments. At the same time, Durham County Sheriff Michael Andrews says authorities are examining video to see who was responsible for tearing down a Confederate statue there.
Let me be clear. No one is getting away with what happened.
Andrews called the destruction of the statue a blatant violation of the law. There will be a runoff next month in Alabama for the Senate seat vacated by U.S. Attorney Jeff Sessions after no candidate yesterday captured more than 50% of the vote required for an outright victory. Luther Strange, who was appointed to the seat and was backed by President Trump, will meet former Alabama Supreme Court Chief Justice Roy Moore. Strange says he's ready for the next step.
Really, what it all boils down to is who's best suited to stand for the future of this country with our president to make sure we make America great again? That's what it's all about.
Moore, who got about 44% of the vote yesterday to Strange's 32%, called it a win.
This is a great victory.
Strange, a former Alabama attorney general, has close ties to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who has been feuding with Trump lately over stalled efforts to pass health care reform. Moore was effectively ousted as Alabama's chief justice last year for defying the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling legalizing gay marriage. It was the second time that he was suspended from the bench. The first was in 2003, after refusing a federal court order to remove a monument of the Ten Commandments from the courthouse.
Prices are for base buildings only. Do not include windows, doors, or accessories. Warning! Don't let your business get left behind in what is likely to be the biggest economic boom in recent history. If you need to build to grow your business, call General Steel today. Steel prices are expected to rise, but you can still lock in your price on a General Steel building if you call now. For example, a 40 by 60 foot building is still less than $25,000. Even an 80 by 150 foot building is under $99,000.
Imagine 12,000 square feet for under $99,000.
This building is designed for your needs, no wasted space. And you get the General's quality and 50-year structural warranty at a price you can afford. You can still save as much as half the cost and time of conventional construction by calling General Steel today. As much as half. So don't let rising steel prices put your project out of reach and stop you from making your company great. Call now. 877-61-STEEL.
It's not too late. Call.
877-61-STEEL. That's 877-617-8335.
Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal along with Rasa Kay. While Defense Secretary Jim Mattis talked of U.S. military readiness in North Korea, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson talked diplomacy. Jerry Seib, Executive Washington Editor of the Wall Street Journal, has more on the different tacks taken by Mattis and Tillerson. Jerry, what have the two been saying?
Well, I think the way Mattis and Tillerson are approaching this is in a kind of a good cop, bad cop situation, and quite intentionally. I think that Jim Mattis is defense secretary, so he's stressing the military options, that there is a military option for dealing with North Korea. So you've heard some pretty tough rhetoric from him, some pretty stern warnings that if North Korea instigates a conflict, they will lose, they'll be overwhelmed, and if they shoot missiles at U.S. territory, including the U.S. territory of Guam, those missiles will be taken out. Meanwhile, Rex Tillerson, who's the top U.S. diplomat as Secretary of State, is saying diplomacy is the first choice. There is an opening. If North Korea wants out of their bind, they should pursue talks, and that we're not interested in regime change in North Korea. We're not trying to depose Kim Jong-un, the ruler of North Korea. And the message jointly to the North Koreans is going to be, if you don't like the threatening talk from the defense secretary, then you ought to listen closely to what the Secretary of State is telling you ought to be done here.
How closely are they working together?
Very closely. They talk, and by the way, this has been, I think, misconstrued or confused by some people, that it appears that they're working at odds with each other, when in fact, they work very closely together. They talk almost every day. They meet jointly with each other. They present a joint front in White House meetings discussing strategy. They've met with the Chinese officials in both the military and foreign policy realm dealing with North Korea jointly. So this is not a guessing game for them. They know quite well what the other is up to.
Jerry, what about their relationship with President Trump? Do they have different kinds?
You know, that's much harder to tell because they're both pretty discreet about their relations with the president. It does seem pretty clear from events of the last week that they're taken by surprise by the president, though, not one or the other, but both of them. They're not exactly sure what he's going to be saying and the tone he's going to be used to saying it about North Korea in particular, but probably things in general. And sometimes they are clearly having to react to the president, not be in coordination with the president. And that's become a sort of a common theme for people who work in this White House and in this administration. So I think that they have good relations with the president, each of them independently and both of them jointly, but that doesn't mean that they are always aware of what he's going to be doing and how he's going to be doing it. I think Donald Trump has shown over the years and since he's been president that he's capable of taking everybody by surprise.
We're speaking with Jerry Seib, Executive Washington Editor of the Wall Street Journal. Jerry, is there a downside to a mixed message from different people in the administration?
Yeah, I think it's hard. It's hard to regulate sometimes, and you know, a single message repeated over and over again is more likely to be heard clearly. So there is some danger of misunderstanding and miscalculation, and particularly when you throw in the presidential wildcard factor that I was referring to. And so one of the things that happened last week, I believe, is that the combination of kind of some blustery statements from President Trump combined with the tough line that Jim Mattis was taking drowned out the diplomatic line from Rex Tillerson. And I think there was probably more panic around the world that maybe there was an actual war with North Korea about to break out than was actually justified by the circumstances. So, yeah, it's hard to calibrate this sort of thing, but that's what the art of diplomacy is about.
Jerry, what is the U.S.'s ultimate goal when it comes to North Korea?
That's a bit of a mystery as well. Nominally, the goal of the whole approach to the Korean problem is to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula, which is to say to roll back entirely the North Korean nuclear program, get rid of the nuclear weapons it's already developed, and make sure it doesn't develop anymore. I think increasingly the question is going to be, is that a realistic goal? Do you really think and do you have a strategy that basically undoes what the North Koreans have done for the last 10 to 20 years on the nuclear front, or do you have to accept that as reality and figure out how to contain it?
Jerry Seib, Executive Washington Editor of The Wall Street Journal. It's 20 minutes after the hour. Rasa Kay is here with more of today's top stories.
Well, Jennifer, mourners gather in Charlottesville, Virginia today to honor the woman killed when a car rammed into a crowd of people protesting a white nationalist rally that descended into violence last weekend. President Trump went off topic during a press conference on infrastructure, reverting to his "on many sides" comment, saying the alt-left is partially responsible.
You had a group on the other side that was also very violent. And nobody wants to say that, but I'll say it right now. You had a group on the other side that came charging in without a permit, and they were very, very violent.
The actual purpose of the Trump Tower appearance was for Trump to sign an executive order that would sharply reduce the time federal agencies spend on environmental reviews before approving projects like new highways.
My administration is working every day to deliver the world-class infrastructure that our people deserve, and frankly, that our country deserves.
The order also expands on efforts begun under President Obama to improve federal permitting, including tracking project progress on a unified dashboard to improve transparency. Hurricane Gert is turning away from the Atlantic coastline, but is churning up the surf from the Carolinas to New England, prompting extreme caution for swimmers, the rip current risk very high. The death toll is expected to rise as rescuers continue to search wreckage in Sierra Leone, where surging mudslides and floodwaters killed more than 300 people, many of them trapped as they slept Monday. The Red Cross says 600 people are missing. Philadelphia's largest transportation union is fighting a proposal for live video monitoring of the authority's employees. Representatives meet with management today to discuss the proposed installation of live feed cameras on city buses and in maintenance shops. They're already in buses, trains, and stations, but only reviewed after a reported incident. The union worries constant monitoring will be used to unfairly punish them for minor infractions. Instagram account at Candy Hunting is known for having junk food news before anyone else and doesn't disappoint with a picture of apple pie Oreos. It's a graham-flavored cookie around the pie-flavored filling. It's available on Target's website, but not at stores yet. Be still my heart.
I don't know. In my mind, apples and chocolate don't go together, but
it's a graham cookie crust. It's not chocolate.
Oh, okay. All right. I'll
see, feel
that.
Better?
Oh, I do.
We should all feel better.
Thank you so much. Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal along with Rasa Kay on this Wednesday morning. And this portion of the show is brought to you by Lexington Hotels. Hello Rewards is our way of saying thank you to guests at Lexington and Red Lion Hotels. Enjoy our best rates and personalized perks. Book your hotel stay today. Well, we're in the midst of an extremely active hurricane season. If you're heading to an area that could be affected, should you get travel insurance? Kelly Grant of CNBC has more on securing coverage and joins us now. Kelly, what factors go into deciding whether or not you need travel insurance?
Well, there is no straight yes or no answer on this one, so it is something that people will have to consider. The first big question they should be asking themselves is how much money is really at stake? If you have an expensive trip, it can be tempting to really look at this, but you want to in particular assess if your plans changed, how much money could you easily get back? Something like an airline ticket, you know, might be a $200 change fee, but you're not out the full value of that ticket. Hotels can often be canceled right up until the last minute. So you need to think about how much money you're really going to lose, and is that too much for you to put at risk?
Is this something you need to worry about only if you're going to an area of the country or the world where there are hurricanes?
Not necessarily, no. I mean, hurricane season is a nice peg for us to be talking about this, but you also want to be thinking about, you know, what are the particular fears that you might have? We hear from a lot of folks who have particular medical concerns, and they're worried about, you know, maybe they won't be well enough to go on the trip. Could be something like, are you going, you know, to or from an area that's hurricane prone, or even through it if you're just flying through particularly prone airports? You know, could just be, you know, anything else that you might be worried about at this point, you know, terrorist attacks. You know, particular disease outbreaks at the destination. If any of that's a concern, it might be worth looking to see what, if any, kind of travel insurance coverage you might be able to find.
We're speaking with Kelly Grant of CNBC. Kelly, what kinds of money are we talking about here? What does it cost?
The cost can vary a lot by policy, but usually you're talking about something, you know, roughly around 10% of the cost of your trip. And again, you know, when we're talking about the cost of your trip, that's going to be how much money you're really going to lose. So you'd want to be assessing that right up front. The prices can vary widely based on the type of coverage, too. There's something called cancel for any reason coverage, and that, true to its name, really means you could back out for any reason. And that's going to be more expensive, obviously, because it gives you a wider opportunity to decide you don't want to go on that trip.
Kelly, are a lot of people buying travel insurance?
What we hear is that people are buying more of it than they had been. And, of course, this is numbers from the U.S. Travel Insurance Association. But they say it's about 42.6 million travelers purchased policies last year, and that ends up being about 32.3 million plans. So usually multiple people on the same plan.
And I would think that that's pretty much found money for an awful lot of insurance companies.
For sure. It's something that they're very interested in having people purchase. You know, and it can be really good protection for the traveler, but you also have to think about what's the likelihood that you're going to use it.
Thanks, Kelly. Kelly Grant of CNBC. It's 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for three straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in defense, cybersecurity, mobility, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan among the top 10 states in the country for business. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org. Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
It's Wednesday, August 16th. Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal along with Rasa Kay. Some of our top stories and headlines this morning. President Trump blames two sides for the violence in Charlottesville and says there were very fine people on both sides. Mourners will gather in Charlottesville today to honor the woman who was killed when a car rammed into a crowd of people protesting a white nationalist rally. Vandalism at the Lincoln Memorial. Daniel Craig coming back as James Bond. And a pizza business it's delivering for a struggling neighborhood. That story coming up in about 20 minutes. Well, with Washington paralyzed on broader immigration reforms, lawmakers at the state level have taken matters into their own hands, implementing new measures, either encouraging support for immigrants or cracking down on illegals. Reporter Reed Wilson at The Hill took a look at recent developments at different state houses. Reed, the numbers look staggering. What's been going on here?
So there are about 133 new laws that have been passed in state legislatures across the country this year dealing with some aspect of immigration reform, or immigration enforcement, I should say. And this all comes basically because there are a bunch of state legislators who have watched Washington talk about immigration for years and years, and nothing's been done. And so these states are saying, the heck with it, we're going to do it ourselves. Now, half of these, or I shouldn't say half, a lot of these bills are coming from people who want to increase enforcement, people who are inspired by President Trump and his rhetoric on the immigration issue. And another large chunk come from people who are worried about what the president wants to do, and so they're passing legislation the other way. So President Trump has really inspired both supporters of immigration reform and supporters of immigration enforcement to do as much as they can, because they just don't think Washington's going to do it.
So what has happened on the sanctuary cities front?
Right, so there are a couple of states, Georgia, Indiana, Mississippi, and Texas, that have passed bans on their localities from becoming sanctuary jurisdictions. And what that really means is that they will withhold funding or withhold grants if those either cities, in a couple of cases, or in Georgia's case, universities, do not cooperate with federal immigration officials. This is, you know, a part of the Justice Department's movement against these sanctuary cities, in which a lot of law enforcement officers are either not permitted to ask about immigration status, or they just don't bother to hold people who are in the country illegally at the request of federal immigration officials.
We're speaking with Reed Wilson at The Hill. And California is thinking about becoming a sanctuary state.
California is going the other way. This is, you know, California is dominated by Democrats, and the legislative caucus is dominated by liberals. As a matter of fact, the governor, Jerry Brown, you know, Governor Moonbeam, is the most conservative person with a seat at the table, and, you know, he's pretty far to the left as well. But the fact is, California is debating a measure now. It hasn't passed yet, and Brown says he wants some changes to it that would prevent the entire state's law enforcement officials from cooperating with federal immigration officials. Now, the whole argument behind this is immigration law is a federal law, which it is, and it is not the prerogative of the states or the cities to help the feds enforce their federal law. That's the argument. Now, of course, people on the other side will say, well, hang on a second, you know, the law is the law, and any law enforcement official is going to have to implement that particular law, whether or not it's a federal or a state law.
What about refugees, Reed?
So there are a couple of states that have passed measures to either fund their own refugee resettlement programs or to pull out of federal refugee resettlement programs. What a lot of states do is they'll work with the federal government to welcome certain refugees or help those refugees resettle in a given state. Sometimes this means as little as, you know, just helping them find an apartment or something like that, and helping them through job training or English language training or something. And so a state like Colorado has just funded their resettlement program for the next year. You know, right now the Justice Department is threatening to withhold grant money from any jurisdiction, whether it's a county or a city, that acts as a sanctuary for undocumented immigrants, that is, that doesn't cooperate with federal immigration officials. There are a lot of people who believe that that is unconstitutional. We just saw Rahm Emanuel, the mayor of Chicago, say that Chicago would proactively sue the Justice Department over the threats to withhold some of this grant money. Some other cities and states have threatened to sue as well. Cities like Seattle, Austin, Texas. You get a sense of sort of where they are in the political spectrum based on which cities I'm talking about.
Thanks, Reed. Reporter Reed Wilson at The Hill. It's 20 minutes before the hour on this morning, America's First News. Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal along with Ross Akay this morning. And now we go beyond the headlines. This morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, here's a story out of Wisconsin that's equal parts scary, courageous, and bizarre. A Milwaukee man who doctors say came perilously close to death after accidentally shooting a nail into his heart while working on his house calmly drove himself to the hospital and even parked his pickup truck in the lot before walking into the emergency room. Doug Bergerson told the Associated Press he was working on framing and a fireplace at his house when his nail gun accidentally fired, sending a nail ricocheting off some wood and into his chest. After initially thinking it just grazed him, Doug tugged at his sweatshirt and realized only about an inch of the 3.5-inch nail was sticking out of his chest. He knew immediately he had to go to the ER, so he calmly washed up, hopped in his truck, and made his way to a hospital about 10 minutes away. After parking his truck and walking into the ER, Doug said he started to feel more pain, and then he finally summoned a security guard for help. Doctors confirmed that the nail actually hit Doug's heart and was only 1/16th of an inch away from a major artery. Somehow, though, he managed to only spend 2 days in the hospital and is heading back to work this week.
Adrenaline?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just glad that at some point he called security so it doesn't make me feel like a total wimp. At some point, he did have to have a little bit of help. You know, he didn't take a number and sit down in the ER and wait for somebody to come get him.
Maybe he was, like, initially in shock and he just kept mechanically going through the motions. I can imagine, it's like, cleaning yourself up before you go to the ER.
Yeah. Adrenaline is probably the right explanation for that.
Oh, my goodness.
And if you're ever cornered by a bear, the advice from experts is generally to make as much noise as possible to scare it away. A Nevada resident who spotted a family of black bears trying to break into a house tried a different tact, however, warding off the animals by having their nephew play for them on the violin. The resident posted a clip of the serenade on YouTube. Now, the bears initially seem to ignore the music, but it eventually appears to have a calming influence, and then they leave the area. The filmer of the video said the music convinced the bears to chill out.
What's that saying? Music calms the savage beast.
Well, yeah, they say beast, but I think it's, or people say beast, but it's actually breast, but you know.
In this case,
either
beast.
One. Yes, in this case, beast, but this is definitely, I think, a case of don't try this at home.
Yeah.
Hopefully not everybody's going to start playing for bears when their instruments from now on.
You know, I play music for my kittens all day long. When I'm out there.
There
just
you go.
Just to calm them down so they're not swinging off the curtains when I get
there
home.
There you go. I'm going to call you up when I get a bear in my backyard.
I'm not sure about that. Thanks, Mike. It's 14 minutes before the hour on this morning, America's First News. Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal along with Rasa Kay. And this portion of the show is brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The best place to start or grow your business is at michiganbusiness.org. Contact them today. Worried about taking a new job that will suck you into an 18-hour workday? Fluorescent lighting, little recognition, and zero job potential? Well, look out for the word entrepreneurial in a job posting. Korn Ferry says it's a great word, but it's being abused in job descriptions because people know it's attractive to younger workers. Sometimes it can be a code for no structure, you're on your own, fend for yourself. Experts tell Moneyish that a demanding work environment might warn of an unforgiving workaholic boss. An involved or a hands-on supervisor could be a micromanaging control freak. And the question, are you courageous and diplomatic, might signal you're walking into a situation that's way too dramatic. In order to protect yourself, ask an interviewer as many questions as possible. Ask for specific examples of a boss's management style, a detailed description of a typical project, or an example of how he or she delivers feedback. And make sure you dig deeper into the company. Don't just look at a website. Check a company's financial statements and ask to see the employee handbook. It's 8 minutes before the hour. Rasa Kay is here with more of today's First News.
Jennifer, a memorial service for Heather Heyer is scheduled this morning at a downtown Charlottesville theater. She died after being struck by a car authorities believe was intentionally driven into a crowd at an anti-fascist protest Saturday. Attendees are asked to wear Heyer's favorite color, purple. At a Trump Tower press conference on infrastructure, President Trump addressed the deadly protests in Virginia Saturday. He wouldn't call the attacker who drove that car a terrorist, though he did call him a murderer. Trump went on to opine that CEOs leaving his manufacturing council after the Charlottesville violence are leaving out of embarrassment and took shots at where their jobs are located.
If you look at some of those people that you're talking about, they're outside of the country. They're having a lot of their product made outside. If you look at Merck as an example.
On the campaign trail, Donald Trump promised to renegotiate the 23-year-old North American Free Trade Agreement or walk away from it. Decision time is nigh. 5 days of talks aimed at overhauling NAFTA begin today in Washington, with negotiations to follow in Mexico and Canada. Alabama's special election to fill Attorney General Jeff Sessions' Senate seat yesterday was down to two Republican candidates, and today it's down to a runoff election next month. Former State Attorney General Luther Strange has friends in high places.
Let me thank the President of the United States, Donald Trump. Let's give him a hand.
Roy Moore is the former state Supreme Court justice who once instructed Alabama's judges to defy federal court orders allowing same-sex marriage.
We need to return prayer and the recognition of God to our public arena.
While someone was looking out for a New York City mom hailed as a hero today after she shielded her three young children, including a newborn, from a massive tree that fell on them during a stroll in Central Park. Ann Goldman flung herself over the kids' strollers. She's got cracked vertebrae and one toddler a fractured skull, but all will be okay. 3D printing company Made in Space successfully completed its first extended test in a space-like environment, printing objects, including a 3-foot-long beam, inside a NASA thermal vacuum chamber. Scientific American says this is huge because it shows it can construct larger, more complicated structures off Earth and avoid the expense of transporting it to a space station, which is, no pun intended, an astronomical expense.
Ba-dum-bum. Thank you, Rosa.
From the gridiron to the kitchen, three former football players at Tennessee State who are also roommates have started a pizza business in Nashville called Slim and Huskies, and it's doing bang-up business. E.J. Reed, Derek Moore, and Clint Gray invested about $1,000 apiece in the business, thinking they'd sell about 300 pizzas a day. Now, since opening in March, they easily sell about 1,000 a day. The three turned a former garage into a pizza-making lab where they developed their unique recipes. And building their booming business wasn't only about doing well, it's also about doing good. They opened in a primarily black North Nashville, where 40% of the people live in poverty, and the unemployment rate is more than three times the rest of the city. Slim and Huskies provide something that's been almost impossible for folks from the neighborhood to find, a job they can walk to. The three say their experience shows that no matter what you look like or where you come from, if you work together, you can create a community that continues to build. That'll do it for this hour. For Rosa Kay, I'm Jennifer Kashinka. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.